Well, last week we were asked to become tightness detectives. Do you remember this? Tightness detectives, which meant to become aware of our internal state and to start noticing when we were tightening up, when we were reacting to something, when we were resisting, when we were becoming triggered. And then in that moment, that aha moment of seeing what we're doing, to then make a U-turn by turning our attention from reacting to whatever's happening out here to noticing what's happening in here, to become aware of what is going on within us, but to do it with compassionate curiosity, not with this eye of judgment, but with compassion and kindness. And the goal of all of this work is to unhook us from this reactive behavior that arises from the spells we've been under due to these unconscious limiting beliefs. Limiting beliefs that we have about ourselves and about the world and about people. But in order for that to happen, we have to bring the light of awareness to these beliefs. And that's what the work has become, to discover what these beliefs are. And as we practice this, we might find that there are some pretty tightly held beliefs that may not want to come out into the light to be released. Beliefs about ourselves, maybe that we're not good enough. Parts of ourselves that we find unacceptable or unlovable. Mary O'Malley talks about having a whole cast of characters within us that we don't want the world to see. And she names some of these: arrogance, despair, righteousness, helplessness, judgment, entitlement, revenge, self-pity. Do you recognize any of those at all? But she adds, there's no reason to be ashamed of any of them. This, everybody has them. We were all born into the kind of environment on this planet where that environment was incapable of mirroring for us our true beauty and reality and Christhood and our true self. It just didn't happen for us. Throughout these early years of our lives, we didn't get the message that we were spirit and expression. At least I didn't. And we took on these beliefs that we weren't good enough or that we were flawed in some way, see? That there's something wrong with me. We might also have taken on a belief that people can't be trusted or that the world's unsafe. There's a whole menu of things that we could have taken on as assumptions about how life is, and then we don't even know we're seeing through those beliefs. They become transparent to us. It's just how the world appears to be to us. It's just how life is. And so, ultimately, as we learn to view the world through these faulty and limiting beliefs, we shut down. We shut down our hearts. We picked up defensive, fear-based coping strategies. We tried to repress those parts that we thought unacceptable or unlovable. They became orphaned, you know, as Carl Jung teaches. And we retreated into our mind and we locked away the innocence and the healing power of our hearts deep inside. And when our hearts are locked up, guess what? The joy of life is equally locked up for us. And so those beliefs we've bought into throughout our lives are not who we are. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes. Alan Cohen tells us unworthiness is a case of mistaken identity. And I have to agree with him on that. They're just conditioned states. They're just mistaken, faulty beliefs that we took on before we had the cognitive ability to reason and to see that maybe, you know, someone was having a bad day. We personalized it and made it about us. And these spells that we're under all stem from a belief in separation. That's the big one. That's the big wound right there. Now, there's nobody to blame for any of this, right? Our parents, our siblings, our childhood friends, the classroom bully, they were all born into that same environment. They took on the same kinds of beliefs, and they showed up as mirrors for us. Mirrors. But the good news is this, that we're not to blame for this, but we are responsible to work with the resulting wounding that has happened, because those wounds can now become the avenue that can lead us to freedom through the power within us. And when we listen to those orphaned parts with compassion, they cease to have power over us. It's our heart that approaches these characters. It's the heart that can listen to their views of the world, our heart that can release them from the prison of our resistance to them. The mind is dualistic by nature. It likes, it dislikes, it wants, it resists all day long. But the heart is holistic. The mind is dualistic, the heart is holistic. It includes rather than excludes. It accepts rather than rejects. And it can weave every single part of us that has become orphaned right back into the wholeness that we truly are. Isn't that good news? You came here for good news today, didn't you? The Sufi poet Rumi in the poem The Guest House says this. It's kind of a long poem, but I'd like to read it to you. This being human is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, he writes. Even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture, still, treat each guest honorably. He may be clearing you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. And it's compassionate, heart-centered attention that we want to give to these guests. Because heart-centered attention that is accepting and embracing, that heals. That heals. That's a healing power that we have. When we were young, our hearts were wide open. And our work is about reopening our hearts and allowing it to guide us. Allowing our heart to be the guide, because when we do, we discover the healing power within us. There's a healing power in non-resistance. Most of our pain is caused by resistance. And when we cease resisting what we're experiencing, this brings us to a phenomenal healing power called All is Welcome Here. And that's my talk title. And you might have thought it was grammatically incorrect, but we might insert the words, all of me is welcome here. And I want us all to say that together. Can we say it together? Ready? All of me is welcome here. We want to welcome all parts of ourselves into our own hearts, even the orphaned ones, even the parts we've deemed unlovable and unacceptable. You may remember a question that Mary O'Malley posed earlier in this series. She said, can you bring that awkward, easily embarrassed, and confused adolescent into your heart? So think about that as you think back on that era of your life. Can you bring that self that maybe has been orphaned all this time into your heart? Now, I have to tell you that when I read that question when I was reading the book, it stopped me because that's a big one for me. That era of my life is a difficult one to bring into my heart. And when I could answer yes, I felt such tremendous relief that happened within me. And I saw how I had been keeping that awkward young girl at bay. I'd been actually keeping her as a hostage all these years, decades and decades, half a century. And what a relief to welcome her back into my heart. So let me ask you, are you willing to let that awkward adolescent within you into the healing warmth of your own compassion?
Yes.
The correct answer is yes. It's about surrounding that younger self in kindness and caring and self-forgiveness and telling him or her that you are with them, that you have been with them their whole life, that you're not leaving them, that they are loved and safe in your heart. It's safe for them in your heart. One of our Q process practitioners calls this kind of work time travel empathy. And I really like that. Any Doctor Who fans here? Oh, come on. Yeah, please. I love Doctor Who. There he is in his TARDIS, you know, going through the universe. I understand the new one's a woman, actually, I think. Yes. Time travel empathy. This is when we give ourselves what we needed as a child and didn't get. We have the ability, as that younger self's future self, to do time travel empathy, to surround him or her with kindness, compassion, acceptance, and love. We have to become aware of what's happening in our psyche so that we can become free of this reactive, unconscious behavior. The poet Adrienne Rich reminds us that until we know the assumptions we're drenched in, we cannot know ourselves. Until we truly look at the spells we've been operating under. Some of them are cultural spells, you know, that we're all kind of under. But until we really see that, we just stay asleep to who we truly are. But whatever's showing up in our world can be the catalyst for our awakening. Years ago, I was a volunteer in a weekly program called The Bridge at a local men's prison. And it was a 16-week cycle for this whole program. And at any given time, there were about 150 men going through the 16 weeks. And during each session, the leader would address the whole group, and then we would gather in small groups of 10 to 12 to discuss the topic of the night. One week, the topic was forgiveness. And one young man, who looked to be in his early 20s in that small group, started to describe the horrendous childhood abuse that he had suffered from his stepfather at 5 years old. And I will spare you the details because honestly, it haunts me still, 20 years later. And in that moment, I understood his behavior a little more. I understood the kind of behavior that got him into that prison in the first place, where it came from. It didn't excuse it, it didn't condone it, but I could see where it came from. And I understood in that moment very clearly what happens to a person's psyche when they believe they are totally worthless. You know, as he was telling us the story, one of the most chilling parts was the way he was telling it. No emotion, very clinical describing this, no shame or embarrassment or any kind of reactivity, just a sense that he deserved it because he was worthless. And I saw what happens when we do not learn how to love ourselves, when we do not learn self-compassion and we have a wound that deep. It turns out to be the kind of behavior that he was now exhibiting, where he was now unleashing it on the world himself. Now, that was an extreme case, but I have to say, this is what we all do. When we do not love ourselves, we project those parts of ourselves that we don't want to see onto the unsuspecting world. Can you see evidence when you look around the world today of that happening? It truly is. If I don't learn to accept myself and love myself, if I go through life believing that I'm flawed or there's something wrong with me, I'm going to project that onto somebody else. Because it feels so much better to pin that on somebody. There's something wrong with that guy. It's not me. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Yes. And even worse, that belief is going to keep showing up in my world all the time, being mirrored back to me until I heal it anyway. What I put out there is being mirrored back to me in some way. The Franciscan priest Richard Rohr says it this way: if we haven't been able to tame all the wolves that show up in our lives, it's probably because we haven't made friends with our wolf within. And I don't suggest we go around trying to tame wolves, but his point is well taken. Until we befriend the parts within us that we don't like, we are not going to find peace. We are going to keep meeting up with those in the outer world. There won't be peace in our lives, and there certainly won't be peace in our world until we do this work. It has to start here. When each of us comes into alignment with the true reality that we are, as we integrate these parts, as we welcome them, as we embrace them, the entire world is blessed by us doing that. If we truly believe in oneness, or, you know, we profess it every week. If we really believe it, then all of us needs to be welcome. All needs to be welcome. And there's a big difference between welcoming those parts of ourselves that we've deemed unacceptable in the past and actually identifying with those parts, believing that's what we are. And it's the heart that can meet them with kindness and compassion. You know, we are totally equipped to be kind. It's our true nature to be loving. It's because we are expressions of divine love. We're set up to do this. And just by learning to move towards our experience rather than... Just by learning to turn towards our experience rather than away from it, we begin to access a powerful healing force within us. It is the spirit within that does the work. And now the energy that was tightly held in all of those spells that we took on can let go. And the more they let go, the more we naturally rediscover the meadow of our well-being. You see it? We learn to stop identifying with the stories and to embrace them rather than suppressing or stuffing them inside where they can cause all kinds of havoc. So recognizing that we create our own personal reality through our unconscious beliefs is absolutely essential to transforming our own personal lives and the world. It's essential. We take back our power when we see this. And if we can create what we don't want so brilliantly, imagine what kind of desirable change we can make through conscious choice. Can you imagine it? You know, this is truly the basis of the Q process, and I know I mention it all the time, but there's a reason for that. I've discovered its power, and I love to see everyone be able to be free of these things, and the Q process can help us get there. It works when you work it. And it makes it safe to welcome in what we don't like about ourselves. It's the safety piece. And we learn to practice self-compassion, self-forgiveness. You know, we allow the heart to do its healing work through the power of aligning with the divine. Byron Katie says all wars should be fought on paper. And I agree with her. And that's what a worksheet can do. It can show us the internal war that's been going on and help us to do that healing work. And if you would like to do a worksheet on this, come and see me. My door is open. If you haven't done the Q process, watch for the next round. It'll be coming up again. But notice when resistance shows up. Just notice that. Notice when the storyteller starts to balk at welcoming in shame, for instance. I mean, nobody wants to do that, right? And yet it's the healing power of the heart that can allow that to happen, and that shame can melt into joyful compassion. I felt it happen in my own body, my own heart. And it feels like an ice cube melting into warm water. That's the sensation that happens. So what would it be like for us if any time we had a painful emotion or a painful memory surface, that we could allow it to take its 90-second life cycle? If you remember, emotions have a 90-second life cycle unless we try to squash them, and then they have a lifetime cycle. So give it its 90 seconds of fame. Ask what it's here to teach. Embrace it, allow it, and let our hearts do the healing. We are not flawed. We are powerful beyond measure. We are spiritual beings in human bodies, trying to stumble our way through the manifest world. And we're so courageous to do that, to forget who we are and to try to manage this. But I'm telling you, the heart is the key. We don't need to be fixed. Fixing's the endless game of the storyteller. It'll keep on trying to fix everything. And that comes from being taught to judge and to fear what's going on inside of us. We're always trying to fix. But the Course in Miracles says this: truth never battles with illusion. Illusions battle only with themselves. Do you see it? The mind will try to solve this, try to figure it out. The heart will merely dissolve it. An ice cube in warm water. So transformation happens in an atmosphere of acceptance and kindness and listening. And when you give yourself that kindness, that accepting, compassionate attention, that tightly held energy that's been orphaned and bound up inside begins to expand, begins to move, and to be set free. And we begin to smile at the antics of the ego, the way we would a young child. So healing doesn't come from fixing or changing or improving or getting rid of or even letting go of anything. It comes when those formerly bound up parts receive full acceptance, welcome, kindness, and they just naturally let go, free from the prison of resistance. Spiritual teacher James Finley wrote this: "I cannot make moments of non-dual consciousness happen. I can only assume the inner stance that offers the least resistance to being overtaken by the grace of non-dual consciousness." We can't force an experience of oneness. We can only remove the blocks to its emergence. And that's what this work does. So rather than trying to fix or get rid of or analyze what we're experiencing, sometimes we analyze it to death. Well, this is because of that thing with my mother when I recognize this. You know, we can just endlessly analysis paralysis. But instead of doing that, the most powerful way to open bound up energy is definitely with compassionate curiosity and attention. So are you up for it? Because when we do that, those orphan parts feel acknowledged and heard and seen and loved. And it's the heart where you move. But you can do this. We can move to a place of stop fighting with what is, and instead give it the space it needs to move. Now, it's not all roses and rainbows doing this work, you know? As our attention begins to touch and open the bound up parts, it can be very uncomfortable, it can be fearful, it can be hurtful. But keep in mind that this is the hurt of healing. It really is. The more we awaken from our clouds of conditioning, the more we realize that there is nothing worth shutting our hearts down for. Nothing. The more we realize that self-compassion is the answer. It really is. So Mary O'Malley shares this quote from an author named Janine Roth: "If you treated your feelings with as much love as you treated your dog or your cat or your child, you'd feel as if you were living in heaven every day of your sweet life." And I got news, we are living in heaven right now. We're already there. We are not alone. The intelligence of life has been with us every step of the way. And the more we align with it, ask for guidance, have access to it, listen, we discover we're not in charge of our healing at all. Something greater is. It's a great power within us that does the work. And compassion is the key to accessing that power. You know, the presence of God is not a location. It's everywhere present. That means it is manifested throughout all of creation and beyond that. It is immanent within each one of us. It's also transcendent beyond. And what that means is if God is in the mess, God's also beyond the mess. And that power is what can help us to welcome the mess. So we hold the key to our healing right here in the heart. And throughout this series, we have explored what Mary O'Malley is calling the four tools of awakening. Following these steps can help us to move from trying to manage life to engaging with life, heartfelt. So the first is to partner with the divine. Partner with the divine and ask guidance of it. Align with spirit by going into your heart, activating gratitude, activating compassion. When we do that, we move into a vibration that is in harmony with the presence. Do you see that? And then turn the challenge over to spirit. Ask, what is mine to do? What do I need to say or do or be in order to have the highest good here? What is wanting to be met? And spend time in the silence asking and listen. So we partner with the deeper intelligence of life and we seek its guidance. The second is to cultivate curiosity. Turn toward your experience. Step out of the storyteller's point of view and be willing to let what's happening inside of you happen. Let it take place. Allow the story to pass through you and become compassionately curious about it. And along the way, we need to change our relationship with discomfort. You know, we need to stop running from it and instead meet whatever's causing the discomfort with kindness and acceptance. Welcome the arising thoughts and the feelings and the sensations as they show up, and then let that bound up energy move rather than being caught in this web of resistance. And we do all this by accessing the power of the heart. True letting go happens when all of the parts within us are fully accepted and welcomed and seen and heard. The heart is what embraces rather than resists. And it dissolves rather than solves. Can you feel the difference between those two? We're trying to solve it, the heart dissolves it. So this week, here are some questions to ponder, whether it's with a small group or on your own. First is to share your understanding of the phrase, the mind tries to solve things, the heart dissolves them. And describe a time when your heart was able to dissolve something that the mind was unsuccessful in solving. And if you don't have an example, practice it this week. See what happens. The next one is, why do you think the author writes transformation happens in an atmosphere of listening and accepting? And you might want to write about this and see what you come up with. How does the heart release our inner characters from their prison of resistance? This work is so important. Can you feel the importance of it? If we are going to create a peaceful world, this is what our work is. We have to do it from the inside out as we welcome all of us into our hearts. And so it is.